Welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. Until now, it has not been known how much of a role multimorbidity plays in the gap between the mortality of Aboriginal Australians and non-Aboriginals. A group of authors from the Centre for Big Data Research in Health has changed that with a study published today at mja.com.au. Dr. Deborah Randall, and Professor Sandra Eads, who are co-authors of the research, are my special guests on the pod today. Why did this research need doing?
There's been quite a bit of research on individual chronic diseases, and it's shown the higher prevalence among Aboriginal people in Australia compared to non-Aboriginal people. And we've also done some research looking at specific conditions like heart disease. That was what I was particularly looking at with Sandra's help in my PhD, looking at heart disease and the comorbidities that were accompanying people who were admitted with heart attacks. And we were seeing that there were higher rates of comorbid conditions and that these comorbid conditions were actually impacting on outcomes. So people who had, the Aboriginal people had higher rates of comorbidities, and this was associated with higher rates of mortality after admission. But no one had actually looked at multimorbidity at a population level as an outcome in itself.
Okay, so we didn't previously know what part of the life expectancy gap was down to multimorbidities.
No, that's right. And we also had been looking more at, I guess, the single chronic diseases,
right,
and their impact, but not on this idea of the cumulative impact of having multiple diseases. Would you say that's right, Sandy?
Yeah, I think you're saying that quite nicely, that everybody had looked at the issue of comorbidities in relation to whatever primary condition they were thinking about, but nobody had back and thought, and that the question from specific diseases aside, what is the level of multimorbidity in the Aboriginal population generally compared to non-Aboriginal people,
mm-hmm,
and what impact have on their risk of death?
Multimorbidity is being increasingly recognised internationally as a challenge because of there's a current focus of the health system on single diseases and clinical specialties. And we were interested in, you know, exploring that for Aboriginal people at a population level and looking at the comparison with non-Aboriginal people.
Tell us a little bit about the design of your research and why you decided on that kind of research.
Well, we used probabilistically linked hospital data and death data for the whole state of New South Wales. So probabilistic linkage uses identifying information such as names and dates of birth to link up records for the same person across time and across different data sets, for example, across hospitals. It gives us a complete picture of contact with the hospital system, and then leading to outcomes such as mortality as well. But this linkage was done by an independent third-party organisation, the Centre for Health Record Linkage, here in New South Wales. So we didn't have access to any of the names or identifying information. They do the linkage, and then we were provided with the identified hospital and death data, and we were able to merge up the data sets using an identifier. Okay, oh, we had this data for quite a long period of time in New South Wales. And so we wanted to define a population of New South Wales residents that were alive at a certain point in time. And we chose March 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And then we wanted to look back at their hospital admissions over the last 10 years and look for particular sets of conditions. So we searched for 30 conditions in total, and we sort of it took a fair bit of time to sort of pick those conditions, but we had chronic diseases such as chronic heart disease, pulmonary disease, heart failure, diabetes. We also had dementia, depression, alcohol abuse, asthma, cancer, different conditions that have been used before in other multi-morbidity indices, but also that have been used on administrative hospital data as well. We were looking for a list of conditions, and we were targeting chronic conditions so that we could be fairly sure that people who'd been identified with a particular condition in that last 10 years would still have that condition at that point in time, the March 2013, even if it was being managed or treated in some way. But we were sort of trying to increase the identification of those particular conditions by looking back such a long way.
At the moment, what is the difference in mortality between Aboriginal Australians and non-Aboriginal Australians?
I think the latest updates from the Australian Bureau of Statistics is that the life expectancy for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Australia is about 10 years lower than for non-Aboriginal people. I think it's about 10.6 years for males and 9.5 for females from the latest estimates. It hasn't changed much in recent estimates, but it has changed in terms of the estimates. Whether it's actually changed in terms of the actual life expectancy is tricky because of the difficulties in estimating it and the difficulties in the data.
So what were your major results and did they surprise you?
Our major results were that the numbers of morbidities per person was higher in all age groups for Aboriginal Australians. And we looked at people of all ages, so from sort of 0 to 5 to 85 years and over. And in all of those age groups, the number of morbidities was higher for Aboriginal people, particularly from the age of 25 years onwards. And the difference in multi-morbidity rates between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal Australians was more than 10 percentage points from that age of 25 and more than 20 percentage points for people aged 40 to 79 years old. And so the gap was opening up quite early, really. And I think that was quite a surprise, probably not a surprise that the multi-morbidity was higher, but that the gap was opening up so early.
I'm chatting today with Deborah Randall and Sandy Eads, who are co-authors of Australia First Research on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Multimorbidity and its role in their mortality. Like all content in our Indigenous health issue, it is open access permanently at nja.com.au. What do you think's going on there? What's happening around age 25, for example, that makes that gap widen?
Well, what we found in our study was that there was a higher rate of the mental morbidities and mental and physical comorbidities that was opening up at that earlier age. Okay.
Does that account for what's going on in the older cohort as well?
When we sort of get to sort of 60 years and over, the physical comorbidities or physical morbidities, were starting to become more prevalent. So there was actually quite a big difference in the types of morbidities at the 25 to 54 year group, for example, and those 55 and over. So a lot more of the mental health type morbidities in the middle age group than more of the more traditional chronic disease type conditions in the older group.
How can we use this data to make things better?
There are three main things, and these results speak to the need for ongoing funding at appropriate levels of comprehensive, culturally safe, accessible primary healthcare services for Aboriginal people and above what is required for the total Australian population. That's the first thing, and there's ongoing debate about what that looks like. But these about multi-morbidity, you know, gaps opening up very early in life really, I think, are supportive of, you know, intensifying and strengthening primary care for Aboriginal people. I think they secondly speak strongly to prevention and the need for prevention to start early in adolescence and early, you know, in childhood, earlier time points, given, as we said, these multi-morbidity disparities open up from age 25 onwards. And there could be a long debate about what exactly that looks like in different components of that approach to prevention, but it really speaks to prevention, both the mental health, prevention of mental health-related conditions and prevention of chronic cardiovascular, diabetes, non-communicable diseases and communicable diseases. The third thing it really speaks to is the need for, we've made progress in the last decade around cardiovascular disease and, you know, reducing deaths from cardiovascular disease, but I think this really speaks to the need for a strong focus over the next decade on mental health and strengthening, you know, mental health prevention in terms of mental health and the strengthening of services and for mental health and drug and alcohol related conditions. That's really got to be a strong part of the next decade of the Close the Gap campaign.
Sandra, if you were queen for a day, what would be the very first thing you'd fix?
I think some of these mental health problems are related to the stolen generations and, you know, the disruption to Aboriginal families. So queen for a day, I'd probably look closely at, you know, the high rates of child removals that we're having currently, because in fact, that's going to perpetuate this long-standing problem we have with, you know, mental health problems being so prevalent in the Aboriginal community. You know, the 2014-15 budget took out $500 million of funding for Aboriginal services, health services. So I would put that back in. That's really having an impact. It's, you know, sort of 5 years since that money was taken out. That's $2.5 billion less service delivery. Those things really do have an impact, I believe. It's a lot to take out.
Yeah.
You know, it was all put in as, you know, part of the campaign to close the gap, the national apology to the stolen generation. And, you know, all of these things just take a flick of a pen, but, and people forget what happened.
Yes.
But the cumulative impact of taking those resources away from these issues and directing them somewhere else are massive.
What about you, Deborah? If you had a magic wand, what would you change right now?
I think Sandra said it very well, but I mean, I think there has to be an acknowledgement of the long lead time that you need and the continual funding and support you need to deal with some of these issues, because I think some of the work that Sandra's been doing in intergenerational health outcomes, it's not something that you can just change quickly. You know, the women are born with the same sort of eggs that the nutrition of their grandmother impacts on the health of their children. You know, there's always going to be this long lead time for things to take an effect, and we can't expect quick wins, but yet we need to be continually working towards it, because it's such a big issue.
Politicians always want the quick wins, don't they?
Yeah. Obviously, that means we have to be constantly proactive and constantly looking at where we can improve immediate health outcomes, but also putting in place systems and interventions that will have an impact from the earliest point in the problem at for mothers and babies, and, you know, because that's where some of those chronic disease risks can come out as well. You know, in our population, we saw that Aboriginal people were almost two and a half times as likely to die in a year as non-Aboriginal people after we adjusted for age, sex and socioeconomic status.
That's an amazing
But
stat.
Then after we, and that was just within a year and a sort of across all age groups accounting for age. But after we additionally accounted for the morbidity count, Aboriginal people were 1.5 times as likely to die within a year as non-Aboriginal people. And so that really highlighted the important impact of multi-morbidity on that gap in Aboriginal life expectancy.
Thank you both for your time. Thanks, Sandy. Thanks, Deborah.
Okay. Thank you.
My thanks to my special guests today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.